It's October, which means it is the season of pumpkins and candy, cobwebs, and bats. International Bat Week is later this month, ending on Halloween, and the State Department of Natural Resources has events planned statewide to celebrate.
Wisconsin is home to 8 species of bats. 4 of those are considered threatened species. That decline is mostly due to white nose syndrome, a fungal infection that's decimated populations of hibernating bats.
But last year, some populations in Wisconsin began to show signs of recovery.
2 conservation biologists with the Wisconsin Bat Program join us now for an update on Wisconsin's bat population and conservation efforts. J. Paul White is the Bat Program lead at the Wisconsin DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation, and Jennifer Riddell is a conservation biologist and cave and mine specialist with the state DNR. Jennifer, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
And Paul, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Paul, let's start with you. October kicks off. What are our bats in Wisconsin doing at this time of year?
Sure. They're migrating either to hibernation sites or they're migrating out of the state entirely. And in many cases, you can find them all along the way. In fact, I stopped by the building here and found one right on the roosting above the doorway.
And Jennifer, we've got multiple bat species, and you were with us about a year ago to talk about white nose syndrome, which people may have heard about. Is this a threat to all bat species in Wisconsin, or those cave dwellers in particular?
No, it's a disease of hibernating bats, and that's because the fungus that causes this disease is a cold-loving fungus, so it only grows in the cool conditions underground on a bat's body that's cold when it's hibernating.
Now, when we last talked to you, this has been, it seemed like nothing but bad news about white nose. There were maybe some positive signs for at least one species. What have we seen over the last year?
Well, over the last several years, actually, we've been getting some good news in Wisconsin, and it looks like our bats may be on a path to recovery. Maybe I wouldn't say a road to recovery, but our little brown
path.
Right. Our little brown bats and big brown bats have been doing quite well. Big browns mostly unaffected, and little browns, the numbers have been going up.
Now, I want to zoom in on little brown bats. I'm kind of familiar with bats. I've talked about them on the show over the years. I didn't realize what a big deal Wisconsin is for. I think it's the little brown bats. They're really concentrated here, right, Jennifer?
Yeah, we have a significant proportion of the little brown bats in the United States hibernating each winter in Wisconsin at just a very few sites, and those are mines.
Paul, some changes have come along in DNR rules about wind turbines. People may have heard about birds and bats having trouble. What kind of changes have there been, and how might they affect our bat population?
Sure. The broad incidental take permit is for wind energy, and the idea is that we recognize that wind is an important energy resource, but we also realize that unfortunately, turbines can detrimentally affect bats. And so we had put conservation measures in place primarily along or in these areas that bats congregate, whether it's a hibernation site in the winter or a summer maternity colony where they aggregate. And so in those areas, we have specific regulations where they actually have to abide by. There are certain cut-in speeds where the wind turbine will start to spin, and we increase those depending on how far they are away from these particular bat priority areas.
And Paul, wind turbines, just one part of the problem, white nose, as Jennifer was saying. Are there other things when it comes to habitat loss or climate change, other things that we are worried about when it comes to their impact on bats in the state?
Both of those, yeah. Yep, habitat loss, climate change, certainly as bats might move, you know, northern in climates. And so we also see that, you know, bats can be evicted during the wrong time of year, and so bats will often find their way into attics, barns, and that type of thing. And if people do not exclude them or evict them during the right times of the year, they can leave vulnerable pups inside and unfortunately separate them from their mothers.
Well, I was going to get into that later. I want to talk to you about I've had that house with bats in it a couple of houses ago. And there's always the question, how do I deal with them humanely in a way that, you know, this is a threatened species that doesn't harm them? What do you tell people, Jennifer, who are in that situation?
Yeah, well, no one should have to share their actual living space with bats, right? We do have to be concerned about rabies, which is in very few bats, but it's a very serious concern.
Yeah.
So to humanely evict bats, we want people to put up one-way doors between August 15th and June 1st of the following year. And that's the period when bats are not using the roost and they're away from that site. And then similarly, if you do find a bat in the living space, if it's just flying around and you've encountered it, you can open a door or window, leave the lights on. You know, we don't want to see that bat get lost under a painting or a couch or something, but it will eventually tire and land if it doesn't fly out on its own. And then you can put a shoebox or a bucket over the top and slide some cardboard underneath and get it put safely outside.
I got to be pretty good at that. And wear your gloves too, right?
Correct.
And that critical period, though, Paul, the bat breeding period, that month that or so that is excluded, why is that so important?
Well, so June 1st is effectively what we call bat birthday. And so that's when many of the pups are born in Wisconsin. And so at that point, they're very reliant on their mother. 3 to 4 weeks, they cannot fly. And so they're heavily reliant on their mother. They cannot fly. And so as the mothers are leaving, these pups are staying put, and they're using their big feet to stay in one place and hold on for dear life until their mothers come back. And so if you evict during that June and July period, you run the risk of allowing the mothers to leave and not come back in. And so that's where it separates, and you'll eventually, unfortunately, you know, you might end up killing half the colony.
Now, Jennifer, tell us about the role of volunteers in as monitors for the well-being of our bat species, especially those cave bat species.
Yeah, we really rely on the data that volunteers collect and submit because Paul and our colleague Heather and myself can't be out across Wisconsin every night at every bat roost. So there are volunteers who count bats as they drop and fly away from the roost at night. So whether that's a bat house or an attic or a barn, they submit the data, or they're out using a bat. We called a detector to record echolocation calls, and each echolocation call is unique to each species. And then we can take all that data in and look at what's happening statewide and kind of keep our finger on the pulse of bat health.
Something I'm curious about, Jennifer, bats are often in old mines. And actually, I was looking at a presentation you did a while back, and you mentioned, well, they must have been somewhere before humans started building mines. What were bats doing before they had these abandoned human-created mines for their hibernation space?
Right. It's kind of a big mystery. And,
really?
You know, yeah, we certainly have a number of caves, but our caves are small. They typically have one entrance, and they're relatively warm compared to the mines that are usually more spacious and complex. And of course, they're relics of industry, and they were places where people needed to be safe. So there's multiple entrances. And that means today, more airflow and perhaps a wider variety of temperatures for bats. So it seems that once mines were opened up on the landscape, and then of course later shut down and abandoned, even though people never intended these to be great bat sites, bats are amazingly adaptable at utilizing our human structures, whether it's, you know, the bat in the attic or the bat in the mine. And they've come in and probably survived in greater numbers because of those good hibernating conditions.
Paul, I know people have put bat boxes up, at least for some species. What kind of difference does that make for bats and their well-being?
It could help tremendously, primarily for little browns and big brown bats. It allows them to keep warm in a safe environment away from predators and the elements, and it allows them to raise their pups so that they can go out and eat a bunch of insects. So yeah, it's a great way, and it's actually a really easy way for us to then monitor them. And if we have some sort of treatment that we're looking for white nose syndrome, we can look at those areas because that's exactly, you know, they're concentrated in these areas, so...
As we head through the fall and then into the winter, Jennifer, what are the big questions for you as you're watching our bat populations, especially those hibernators?
Yeah, well, we're always curious to see what we're going to find. We go out and survey approximately 50 hibernation sites each year. Again, most are concentrated, you know, in the old mining areas and also the Driftless area where we have natural caves. So the southwest corner of the state. But also
along, lead mining area, places like that.
Right, and also along the Niagara Escarpment and up into Door County, as well as Pierce County, where we have former frack sand mines. And we're always anxious when we go in to, you know, see, has the population continued to grow these last few years? And that makes us feel pretty hopeful when it has. But I have to say that not every species has been impacted the same way. The news is very mixed, so when we go into most of the small sites, the caves and smaller mines, we're not seeing stabilization or recovery in many of those sites. They are still missing most of their bats.
Paul, what do you wish people knew more about bats?
Well, I mean, they're mysterious, they're gentle, we need them, and they need us. And so besides the fact that they eat so many different agricultural pests, forestry pests, and human pests, it's just amazing to be able to marvel at them at night now more than ever.
International Bat Week is coming up. What do bat people do to celebrate, Jennifer?
Well, it's a time to celebrate the importance of bats in the environment. You know, people are so fascinated by them. We want folks to go out and learn about them. And there are events happening all across the state of Wisconsin throughout the month of October. We turn it into Bat Month, not just Bat Week, even though Bat Week is at the end of October. So if you visit batweek.org, you can find events near you. And when you learn something, hopefully it's going to be how to help bats. And then we hope you'll be inspired to go out and do that.
Now we'll leave it there. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jennifer, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
J. Paul White is Bat Program Lead at the Wisconsin DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation. Jennifer Riddell is a conservation biologist and cave and mine specialist with the DNR. They join us for an update on Wisconsin's bat population and conservation efforts. By the way, we've got a video up on our Instagram and YouTube feeds with some visual aids from Jennifer and Paul and a bat that made a stopover on the outside of Vilas Hall, where we host this show from.